Is it just going to be like a 2-hour indie single camera film inside of the Sarlacc pit? Just Boba Fett, like, internal monologue the whole
slowly
time?
Sawing his own arm off and out with a video camera?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Man, I really hope James Franco is Boba Fett.
Oh, God.
Oh, so wonderful.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. My name is Matt. You guys still haven't gotten used to this. This is mind-blowing.
I think we're trying not to step on each other's
I think so too.
Mic time. I'm Scott, by the way.
And I'm Ash, even though I already said it. Hi.
Fantastic. This is episode number 158.
You know, technically we don't have to keep doing this anymore, but I suppose we can.
Oh, yeah. We might as well. Who knows?
Maybe we'll fall into a rhythm eventually. You never know.
Yeah. Eventually. So episode 158, we're here. Been recording on a pretty normal schedule lately. And how you guys doing?
Good, man. It's been a nice, relaxing week for me, kind of getting ready to head off on some adventures and travel a little bit, which is cool. It's been nice, though.
Cool.
I got coffee, so everything is right with the world for the next few hours.
I have coffee as well.
Yeah, everything is great. How about you, man?
We're all coffeed up.
Caffeine really, really makes a difference, I think, especially in the morning.
Yes.
It does.
Let's do the rundown.
What do you guys want to do today? We'll make it up
just
as we
hang
go.
Hang out, hold hands, ring around the rosy.
We're at this awesome time where fucking nothing is coming out, so.
Yeah.
It's great. So we're just going to shoot the shit, I guess. So
Post E3 pre-Comic-Con, nothing.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll shoot the shit. We'll talk about a little Star Wars news. Amazon announced a phone, which is a thing, I guess. And there's some drama in the digital music world. We'll talk about that. I got a Wii U, so I'm going to talk about Mario Kart 8.
Sweet.
What? Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And then there's a Steam summer sale going on, if you didn't know. Ash picked up a game called Risk of Rain. He'll talk about that. And then sort of inspired by my love for Binary Domain in our Naquato this week, I asked, what is your pick for an underrated game, film, or book that never got the love that it deserved?
Sweet.
You guys gave us a lot of responses and a lot of stuff I've never, ever heard of. So that's kind of exciting.
I did love your tweet, Ash, that you said, you know, we secretly ask this question every year just to see all the stuff that we've missed out on. it's pretty true.
It's very true. I thought maybe by doing this we could discover something as well, which
for sure. There's a lot of stuff on the list that I've never, ever heard of. So it's going to be kind of cool.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible's got over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on the iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 other devices for your listening pleasure. And if you go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA, so that's www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA, you can get a free book and help out the podcast. So please do that. That would be fantastic for us.
I bet those books will play on the Fire Phone as well.
Yes, we 100% positive they will.
Yeah.
And we're always very, very happy when we see that. And I have a book that I can suggest, although I have not listened to it yet. I was thinking about picking it up and listening to it, although I might read it too, or do both. Book 4 of The Expanse is out. Cybilla Byrne is out. And The Expanse, if you haven't remembered from the 19 podcasts I've talked about the series, is the one that started with Leviathan Wakes and went to Caliban's War and then Abaddon's Gate. The fourth one is out, and I am majorly excited. Amazon notified me like a week ago, like, hey, your book is waiting for you on your Kindle. And I'm like, oh, my God. And it is available on Audible, so go pick it up and listen to that, or if you haven't, pick up the first one or the second one or whichever one you're on and listen to that one, because these books are fantastic.
So. Awesome. Have you read any of the novellas? Apparently there are some short stories.
I read the one about I just blanked on his name. The one about the guy Oh man, what is it called? Yes, I've read one of them. I'll just leave it at that.
That's an acceptable answer.
Yeah, I'm totally like morning blanking on his name, but it was about the guy who led the army during this like big slaughter, essentially, and then left and started leading a different army. So
cool.
But it was good, and I can't remember any other names right now because that's what I do.
We're off to a great start.
Yay! So Ash, what have you been up to?
It's been weird because I've had free time and like absolutely nothing to do with it, which is good and bad. So I've been kind of going through and cleaning up some achievements in old games and just kind of actually relaxing, which has been super nice. I've learned to sleep in past 8 o'clock again, which is crazy. Like when you guys said, let's go early this morning, I was like, do I have to get up?
Wow. So, I almost text you like at 6 a.m. because I thought you'd be awake.
I mean, normally this summer I've kind of learned to sleep in again, which has been great. But I made the joke that I've become a master hacker in Watch Dogs because one of the achievements that I was trying to get was you have to infiltrate enemy games and you have to hack enemy players. And you have to do it 10 times successfully. And what I learned is that is not so easy of a task. So in order to hack in Watch Dogs, what you have to do is you have to wait for an enemy or another player, I guess, to screw up one of his hacks. And then it basically sends a message that says, hey, there's a hacking mission available. And then I can dive into their game and I can tail them anywhere on the map. So they'll show up on my map and I have to like sneak up behind them. And then once you get within visual range, you can start your hack on them and it creates like a small radius that you have to stay inside of while the hack continues all the way to 100%. And it's pretty slow. It takes maybe 2 minutes real time in order to complete the hack. So for 2 minutes, you're playing this awesome game of hide and go seek and cat and mouse. And I've gotten really, really good at it. I've developed like all these different methods and tricking people. You can like hide in the front seat of cars and lay down, which is really cool.
Yeah.
You can get up on high overpasses and basically just, you know, aim down and start your hack from above and they'll be running around below the overpass. And if they see you, they can kill you. So you have to, you know, also be close enough to a car to try and get away. That way you get like partial credit for it. Hmm. But it's really fun. It's actually, I think, in everything in Watch Dogs, and at this point I've done almost everything. I think I'm at like 85% complete. In everything in Watch Dogs, the hacking is the best. Hacking other players is absolutely the best. It's so much fun. It creates, like, I was joking around with my wife, but the same sensation you got when you were a kid, when you were playing hide and go seek and someone was about to find you and then they turned around and went the other way. It creates that exact same feeling. You get butterflies in your stomach. You kind of get the sweats a little bit. And every single match is that way because honestly, you'll be behind like a barricade, duck down, and they'll be 2 feet away, like scanning the area and looking for you, and they'll miss you and just walk past you. So it's super, super cool. And even if, you know, you weren't going to pick up Watch Dogs, definitely rent it and check out that portion of it.
It sounds a bit like Assassin's Creed multiplayer, how you're supposed to sneak around and kind of stay out of the way and do stuff like that.
It is. It's a bit like that. And plus you do appear as like an NPC to the other player. So you're not appearing as Aiden in their game. You appear as just like some random person. So it is a lot like the Assassin's Creed multiplayer. The thing that's great about it is rather than being confined to a single area in the map like it is in Assassin's Creed, you have the whole city. So wherever that person is in the city, whatever they're doing, you'll appear in their game and kind of just be someone in the background and get to do your thing. So it's very sneaky. It's very stealthy. It's like of all the games I think I've played online, this one definitely makes you feel like a spy more than any of the others.
Oh, that's great.
So it's really, really cool, and that's really enjoyable. Unfortunately, a lot of the other multiplayer modes, which I had to, you know, try out to try and get the 100%, are a little weird and kind of broken. Like some of the races are a little bit broken. They get a little choppy, a little laggy. The frame rates drop, so that's kind of a bummer. But also, I've been meaning to ask Matt about this, but there is an open world. Like I can just hop in with you, Matt, and we can run around the city and like do whatever. Okay.
I was just about to say that one of the shames of all the multiplayer stuff is that it's not very conducive to your friends list. You know, like it's not like I can hack you personally. And I mean, I can with the second screen stuff, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's not very interplay. It feels like it's very,
no, you're totally right. And the reason they did that is because there's like a, a reputation system they have set up. So the more successful you are in like hacking other players, you build a rank up. And as you build your rank up, you get more unlocks, you get more abilities and stuff that make you an even better hacker. But the problem is, if you fail, you lose ranking. So they can't have you just with your friends. You'll still be able to, like, you know, trick the system. So, but what we could do is just get in and run around the open world and do missions and stuff like that, I think. So
I've been having, so like, not to hijack your,
but it's
Watch Dogs related, because I've been playing this week and trying to just finish the story.
Yeah.
And I've been coming to the realization that everything good about Watch Dogs is everything but the story in the game. Yeah. Like, it really, there are some cringeworthy moments in the story at certain parts.
Yeah.
And then it's just kind of flat, and they force you to run and gun a lot, which is like the worst part. I mean, not the worst. The guns are good, and it's not like a bad mechanic. It's just not the mechanic I want to play in the game, you know? Like, there was the one mission where you go to the gang, like, you basically go to
the lair.
And the way it looks, like, you're like, oh, I'm going to try and sneak through this and not, like, have to shoot everybody. I must have tried 6-7 times. Every time I would alert somebody and end up in a gunfight, like, eventually. And then eventually, you know what I ended up doing? I ended up literally walking up to the compound and just opening fire on them and just, like, killing the first four guys I ran into, and then just walking in and, like, sniping the other guys that are sitting around. Like, I was like, screw it. I'll just kill everyone in this place because it's the only way I can get through the mission.
Yeah.
And then I realized that after you get through the first half, they force a whole round of guys on you regardless of what you've done to, like, that come in and try to shoot you. Like, it's just, like, they keep forcing the gun mechanic in the game, and I'm like, why?
Yeah,
why?
There's a lot of really weird design decisions. Like, and you know, like, they said this in the media before, but it was supposed to be based around hacking, but I feel like it was they were trying to appeal to too broad of an audience with as much as there's too much to do in the fucking game. You know, and,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's ridiculous how much there is to do. Somebody that I guess follows what I do online, I don't know why, but somebody's like, dude, you just hit 100 hours in Watch Dogs. And I was like, oh my God. And I'm not even 100%. But I played the living shit out of that game. I've done everything there is to do. But you're absolutely right. There is a super heavy reliance on the shooting when probably there shouldn't be. And I totally agree with you that the story is the weakest part. As soon as I finished it and I started to run all the side missions, I had a lot more fun with it. And then you just realize, like, holy cow, this game was basically, they built an awesome sandbox, they built an awesome hacking mechanic, and they kind of slapped a story on top of it. Because they built a beautiful world with a lot to do, but then they're like, oh, okay, now we need a story. And even the missions are just kind of like, oh, well, let's do this and have him say this. And it doesn't all really tie together all that well, which is really a bummer. So
yeah, I realized that because when I was playing and I went from you know, like, the beginning, I did a lot of side missions. I wasn't just, like, running through the story. I was doing, like, a bunch of different things and trying everything out. Mm-hmm. And I was really enjoying the game and having a great time. And then this week when I was like, okay, I'm just going to barrel down the story just to get it done, and then I'll play around in the world, I got, like, halfway through doing the story and I just was like, God, this is, like, it's boring me. Like, I'm just not even enjoying this right now.
And it
is that they made such great mechanics, and they made this great open world kind of, like, fun game around this just sort of half story of just, like, you know, and I won't even get into some of the other stuff that other blogs have written about, but there's just things in it that you're just like, why? None of this makes sense. Why is this happening, you know?
Yeah, I do have to say, one of the things that's kind of, like, grossing me out is one of the things you can do is walk around and just hack random people, hack their cell phones, listen to their conversations. And then there's these infiltration missions where you hack into, like, literally into people's houses and you spy on them, like, through their, essentially, like, through their Kinect or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Because they all have, like, a camera mounted in their house someplace. So you spy on all these people, and almost all of the people you spy on are fucking horrible people.
Yeah.
There's like dudes jerking off. There's like, not that that makes you a horrible person, but in a video game, it's a little disconcerting. So there's like dudes jerking off. There's like a guy that, like, the worst one that just, like, literally made me feel sick to my stomach is you call in and there's a dead old guy on the floor and his phone's ringing and it's the dead old guy's son. He's like, hey, Dad, sorry I haven't called you in a while.
Oh, God.
It's so fucking dark. And everybody you hack along the street has, like, horrible things going on in their lives. Yeah. they've been like beaten, and I'm just like, man, is this what Chicago's really like? Because like, I really hope not. I really hope it's a much better place. But anyway, so Watch Dogs is fun, but it, you know, it definitely has its lumps.
Yeah.
Scott, let's talk about something lighter.
Yeah.
Like the Wii U?
Yeah, like the Wii U.
All right.
Actually, you're going to review Mario Kart 8. I want to hear about the other game you have listed there.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about. So yeah. What I'll talk about now is I'll talk about the Wii U in general, and then one of the games I picked up, which is Wonderful 101. So I think over the last two podcasts, we've effectively talked me and possibly Matt into getting a Wii U. So I was able to find one in town and acquire it. So I guess the only thing that I would say about the Wii U, the hardware, is that it's really impressive. It's that gamepad is much more powerful than I think what it looks like when you're just walking by in the store. It's essentially the machine. It's the second screen for the machine. And if you want it to be, it can be your primary screen for that Wii U system. So without even having to switch the TV input, I can power the Wii U on with the gamepad, load into a game, and just start playing the game. So I could play Mario Kart 8 just directly on the gamepad. So
how big is the screen? It's like 6-inch, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Somewhere in there, 5 yeah. to 6?
I would say, yeah, between 5 and 6. So it's weird. You know, you have to charge it. So I almost like use it the same way that I would use the 3DS when the TV is not on, in the sense where like the Wii U gamepad sits on a charger. It's not even in the same room as the console itself. So I can pick it up. I think it uses Bluetooth to stream from the system to the gamepad.
It can't be Bluetooth because you'd be so range limited that way. It's got to be something.
I don't know, but it's amazing, whatever it is. So I got a Wii U. The only thing that's weird about it is that they allow you to transfer your basically all of your Wii content over to the Wii U system, which makes the Wii in essence obsolete. But what it does is it actually emulates the Wii system inside of the Wii U. So when you want to access the functions of the original Wii on the Wii U, it basically reboots the system into the Wii. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Weird. Yeah.
It's super strange. So yeah, like when you reboot the system into the Wii, you have to use a Wii remote. But what's interesting about this is that once you start the Wii system using like the traditional sensor bar, you have to hook up the sensor bar to your TV just like in the olden days.
Mm-hmm.
But once you say like, yes, I'm ready to go, you can switch the input. And then you can walk away with your gamepad and you can use the gamepad as the Wii system because the Wii remotes will track on the gamepad.
What?
Does that make sense?
I mean, it sounds awesome, but is that something that anyone actually wanted?
I don't know. Like, you can...
I mean, it sounds awesome, but it's like super cool tech, but it's like, who the fuck is going to do that?
You well, know basically what I'm saying is that you can play everything on your Wii and the gamepad has a sensor bar built into it to track Wii remotes.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is crazy. So you could set up like a 5-inch screen, like just dock it somewhere, and then like point the Wii remote at that and play games on that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So you can basically like watch TV and play on the gamepad right in front of you. It's super bizarre.
I feel like you describing this is just proving that Nintendo had like a sort of Microsoft marketing fail on this thing, which was just like naming it the wrong thing for one that was confusing, yeah. And then just not selling it to families like they should have, you know?
There are not too many things out of the gate with
Zelda and a Metroid too.
There are like way too many interesting things about this system that I think would be impossible to explain in a 1-hour press conference, you know. And then we already know now that
but I mean, it's been 2 years.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? But you discover these things as you set up the system, because when you boot into the system, it goes, point your Wii remote at the TV, but make sure it's not also pointed at the gamepad, like set the gamepad to the side. And I was like, why would I have to set the gamepad to the side? And then I realized that it works with both once you start it. And like I said, the only thing that's weird is that you have to start it on the TV before you can move to the gamepad. But if you just want to do stuff on the Wii U, like the proper system, you can boot up straight from the gamepad and play games on the gamepad. So that's, in a nutshell, that's the technology. The process of transferring the data between the systems was like a little like multi-step cumbersome. It had a lot of like words and directions, but it all seemed to work. So I'm up and running. One of the games that I picked up was Wonderful 101, which is what I want to talk about. briefly. It's a platinum game. I think it's made by the same designer or developer who did games like Devil May Cry and what's the one with the wolf? Okami, right? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was Okami. I think it's the same guy who did Okami for sure.
So it's The Wonderful 101, I think, is maybe going to be one of my picks for a game that is maybe overlooked and underrated. Because when you look at it at a glance, it just looks like a beat-em-up for kids. Because the premise of the game is that you control like an entire mob of individuals, and this mob of individuals fights like within this town, and it's very like super stylized, like it's a action movie with.
It looked very like Pixar action movie-ish.
Yes, it looks like a Pixar movie with action heroes, almost like The Incredibles.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But what you don't immediately grasp is that underneath, like all of that, like in the background, is pretty much the entire battle system that you would find in a game like Bayonetta.
Oh man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really weird. So the first night I played it, I was terrible at it. And I was like, okay, I don't get this. I hate it. I'm already kind of hesitant with like those Japanese style fighting games where it's all based on time and like perfection and scoring the most points and getting super combos, because I feel like that kind of detracts from exploring and experiencing like the game. Mm-hmm. But I went online, I found some videos, and once I watched the videos, I was like, okay, I understand what's going on now. There's like combos and chains and juggling and aerial attacks, and your mob basically can morph into different structures or different like attacks. So you start out with a guy that can transform the mob into like a giant fist for like fighting. Mm-hmm. And then you also get the ability to transform into a giant sword. I have one that's like a gun, and then I just got one that's a whip. And so to do a lot of these transformations, you either have to draw the shape on the Wii U gamepad, or you can draw it like with the right thumbstick. And it almost creates total mayhem in the game while you're trying to figure out like what's the best weapon to use against this enemy. And you can even like spawn weapons to fight alongside you, so you don't have to transform into a sword. You can spawn like a sword alongside you to fight with you while you're the gun shape or something. So the whole game is like totally bonkers. And yes, there are a lot of those like score attack, and the game expects you to repeat it over and over again. When you start playing the game, it gives you three difficulty levels, which are very easy, and normal. And then to unlock hard, you have to beat normal, and then to unlock very hard, you have to beat hard. So it's like the game expects you to play it, you know, at least three times, which I'll never do. And then there's a bunch of stuff to unlock and stuff to collect and all that other stuff that it's like not really interesting to me. But what is interesting is the execution of the game and just how sort of crazy, over-the-top, stylized it is. And I don't know. It's just great. Like, it's hard to explain the game without looking at a video of it. But once you kind of grasp what is going on, you find that there's a very mature combat system underneath this game. And it really becomes a very technical experience and not something that is like, oh, just a game for kids.
So
that's Wonderful 101. The other thing I'll say is that this game recently went on sale for like $24. So you can pick it up anywhere super cheap. I think this game was originally, there was an article that came out that this game was originally supposed to be featuring Nintendo characters. So it was supposed to be like 100 Nintendo characters fighting as a mob. And then for some reason that didn't work out. But
oh shit.
I know.
Probably that would have sold a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been crazy, because you can even see it. Like, pretty much the colors you start out with are like red and blue and green and then pink, which could have been, you know, Mario, Luigi, Toad, you know, Sonic, all that stuff. But it's still a great game. I mean, if you've played any platinum game before, you know what you're getting yourself into. So
it was one of the games that was like on my list of, because if you know we've talked about this before, but if you buy the Wii U right now, you get a freebie game, and I think that was one of them. Or no, it wasn't.
It's not really cheap, right? It's like 20 bucks. It's super cheap. It's like $24. The other two games, I mean, the games you can get for free right now are like Zelda, Pikmin 3, Mario Kart, Mario, New Super Mario Brothers U.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, it's just crazy. The deals are crazy right now. Amazon's got like most of the new games like at $45, like $45 to $50 right now.
It's just one of those, like, I just really feel, I don't know what they, I'm not a marketing expert, I'm just going to put that out there now, guys.
Okay. We've established
that. Like, it just feels like they have just for 2 years failed to make parents realize this is a great system for families that has like a second screen, but also has games that you'll enjoy. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like they've just failed outright. And granted, yes, the obvious things, which we've talked about a million times and they finally fixed at E3, were like, put a frickin' first-rate Zelda game out on this thing. You know, put out, like, Star Fox, you know, whatever. Put out the titles that everybody knows and you'll sell the machine. But also, it's like, that second screen stuff to me is mind-blowing. I couldn't imagine being a dad with, like, a 5- or 6-year-old. I couldn't imagine that for many reasons. But I couldn't imagine being a dad with a 5- or 6-year-old and being like, yeah, sure, you can go ahead and play, you know, whatever little kid game on the second screen while I watch TV, or, you know, like having this like fully powered console while I'm sitting in the house and having a second screen that's usable with it. Or that's... I can watch you can watch TV on it too, right? Doesn't it HDMI pass through?
No, it's, it does something weird. It's, it doesn't do a pass through. I don't think you can watch TV on the gamepad, but the gamepad.
I thought you could. I thought they said you could.
I don't remember. I haven't figured it out because it's not set up that way, but the gamepad will control a television.
Yeah.
But that's the problem, is that it only controls the television. No. It'll control a television in a cable box. But like, if you have a receiver.
But not a receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, obviously, even if it had HDMI pass-through, honestly, like, the Xbox One is too powerful to give the Wii U that control. But still, it's just like, I feel like there were a lot of features that they just failed to sell to people, you know?
Yeah.
Whether they talked about them or not, but
who knows? It's like, it's ridiculous. It's as easy as, like, you're playing the game on your TV. Let's say, like, the parent comes in the room and goes, like, hey, is it cool if I watch TV? Sure. Like, you just push the select button on the gamepad, and then the game is on the gamepad, and you just keep playing. It's so dead simple, and it works so well.
That's cool.
That it's just, like you said, it's a failure to demonstrate, like, the power and the benefit of the console.
Well, I mean, just for a quick second, you know, we've been doing the site and the show for almost 4 years now, and has Nintendo ever, like, sent us any press release? Or I mean not to say that, like,
not that they should.
We're unimportant, but at the same time, it's like most other publishers have reached out in some capacity after 4 years to, like, say, hey, this is something we're putting out. Just from a marketing perspective, that's what you do. Even though we're very, very small fish, it's still like you acknowledge the existence of the little guy, because sometimes the little guy can, you know, send your information to the big guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, what exactly are they doing? Who are they trying to appeal to? You know, it's just, it's weird to me.
I think they didn't. I think that's that was the fail out the gate, was that they thought they were it seems like they thought they were a Wii company and not a Nintendo company. So they named it Wii U. They put that out, like, and then it became like this weird, confusing message where they're showing a second screen and they would never show the actual box itself. And everybody was like, well, is this just like a second screen for the Wii? Like, it was like the most baffling release ever created. And, you know, obviously, whatever. I think time will fix it. I think the more games they put out, like Mario Kart 8 and, you know, Zelda and whatever else they can come out with, the better. But, you know, it's a shame. When I saw Wonderful 101, I was like, that game looks pretty awesome. I just have no reason to buy this system.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Turns out the game is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The last thing I'll say is that the gamepad is actually much, much lighter than what we held at PAX.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, huh. So like that was probably like a demo or development version.
It probably had like the sensor pack on it too, so no one ran away with it.
Yeah, that's true. The gamepad itself is super light, and I thought that after, you know, prolonged gameplay that it would become cumbersome, but it just works.
Cool.
Yeah, the only other thing I did was, I'm trying to play down my Steam pile, finally played Gone Home and was really impressed with what I found.
Oh, good, man.
And it's true what everyone says. You can't talk about this game because to talk about it ruins the experience, so... I'll just say that I'm glad I finally played it and I really enjoyed it. So
about 3 hours for you, I'm assuming.
Yeah. About 3 hours.
I thought it was totally worth it. I think it's one of the Steam sales coming up too. So
yeah, really enjoyed it. Really impressed with that. So kudos to them for that. I hope they do something else in the future.
Cool.
So Matt, I know you talked a little bit. Do you want to add anything to your?
Regrowing limbs like a lizard right now.
That's good.
That's an odd sensation. I don't know. I played Watch Dogs this week.
How is gaming in your current condition?
I can't do super extended sessions with the gamepad because it just eventually it starts to kind of like throb a little, I guess is the best way to put it. It's not that like my pinky like outright, it's not crazy pain. There is no crazy pain anymore. It's kind of past that. We're about 2 weeks in now. Uh-huh. But it's just sort of 2 weeks? Week and a half. It's just sort of it, like I can feel my heartbeat in it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a dull pain when that happens. So if I sit with the gamepad, like I play for like 2 hours at a time, and that's about as I have to take a break after that. Typing is really weird, which is great because my job involves nothing but typing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's just healing. I love the "how you doing?" question because it's still like I'm fine. Yeah. Like I, as a person, am totally okay. I just, you know, am missing a chunk of my pinky and growing that back currently. But it's good. It's fine. I'll heal eventually. I don't think there's really. I had a crazy busy week at work, doing stuff for the company I can't name. So. We'll I'll talk about that later when there's time to talk about it, but it's been busy and that's fine. So otherwise, you know, Watch Dogs, excited to hear about the Wii U. I've been hunting for one, so, and I can get the Mario and Luigi bundle.
Yeah, the Mario Kart 8 bundle is hard to track down.
Yeah, I worked it out in my head. I was like, god, that Mario Kart 8 bundle is such a good deal, because if you want to get like an extra controller and Mario Kart 8 with the Mario and Luigi one, you end up paying almost $400.
Yes.
And with the Mario and Luigi one, it's $330, and you can get Mario with it. So it's like, it is a much better deal. But
yeah, you know. And that Mario Kart 8 deal, I think, is good until the end of July.
Yeah, it is. I think. Yeah.
Don't quote me.
I think
on that.
The free game deal is only good through July.
That's what I meant. That's what I was saying.
That's like what you're saying? Oh, yeah.
If you register a copy of Mario Kart 8 on Club Nintendo, I think before July 31st, you can still get that code for a free game download. Yeah.
So anyways, that's been my week. You guys want to, you know what else is? I don't know. I can't transition.
Hey,
this. Let's
try it again. Wait, do it again.
So that's been my week. What was I supposed to say?
I don't know.
There's Star Wars news. You know what else is fucking weak?
You know what else will make you go, Wii U?
News.
All right, let's talk about Star Wars.
Rian Johnson, the director and creator of Looper, as well as Brothers Bloom, right? And I think something else, has been named to be the writer of both Star Wars 8 and 9 and the director of Star Wars 8.
Hmm. Does this is almost guarantee, right? That Star Wars is going to have time travel in it?
No, let's hope not.
Because it's J.J. Abrams.
Oh, no.
Jeez. I don't think it will. I mean, who knows? He did post a really funny tweet when it got announced. He tweeted out a clip from the... which space movie was it? One of the real stories, real accounts of launching the rocket to the moon or whatever. I forget which one. Either Apollo. I don't remember which one it was.
Right,
but anyways,
stuff, maybe.
Maybe. And it's the actor sitting in like in a spacesuit, and he's like, they're getting ready to launch it. And it's like they're counting down, and it gets to five. He's like, all right, man, just don't. Or no, he's like, dear God, please don't let me fuck this up. and then ground control's like, what? And he's like, I said everything's looking good. We should be fine. And they're like, yeah, that's what I thought you said. He's like, okay, cool.
That is the hot seat. They're going to be, you know, examining this guy. Because I feel like with J.J. Abrams, the people are like, oh, like he can do that. And everyone, you know, there's some people that were pissed. But most people were like, he has the capacity to do this. Rian Johnson, I mean, Looper was great.
Looper was great. Yeah.
But. You know, it's not like he's a battle-tested warrior.
No.
You know what I mean? J.J. Abrams has directed a lot of shit and a lot of different shit. So it's interesting to see. But, you know, again, this is sort of like, assembling the dream team. It's not just Rian Johnson with a fucking camera. There's like a thousand of the best people on the planet helping him make this movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would take just a colossal clusterfuck for these movies to be really, really bad.
Yeah.
Or someone with like an ego the size of George Lucas that says, no, you can't do this. I have to do it my way. You know
what
I mean?
A lot of Disney dollars behind it. So.
George Lucas really seems to have sort of let go of a lot of this, like kind of let it become its own.
Well, with
beast.
Like $4 billion, you can pretty much go do whatever you want at this
point. Yeah, exactly.
So are you guys excited for this news or Do you care?
I am. I think that, that handing the reins to a young, sort of maybe not what you would think talent is okay. Like, I feel like, you know, you give this to like a Spielberg or something, and it's like, it's pretty obvious what's going to come out. It might be good, but it's going to be a Spielberg movie, you know?
Yeah,
and giving it to Rian Johnson feels like he's going to have some sense of it being his movie, of course. But like you said, there's going to be a million other people, and he doesn't necessarily have the ego or power to like make this, you know, like, no, I'm going to make this a time travel movie about, you know, like, it's going to be crafted, and he's going to kind of just be at the helm making sure that things are going correctly. So
it's
I think that's not fine.
Michael Bay, you know.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Be like, how did you get U.S. military tanks in this fictional universe? It's just what I do, man.
Explosions in Star Wars. Yeah. It's amazing. Why is Megan Fox in this movie? Oh, did you guys hear the guys that did the new Godzilla? They're doing the not the spinoff of Star Wars, but they're doing the Star Wars standalone, first Star Wars standalone film, which is kind of crazy.
Is it Yoda? Is that what they're doing?
I don't know. I think it's going to be in the same timeline.
I mean, it was either supposed to be like Yoda or Boba Fett, right?
I think it's Fett. I think it's Boba Fett is the first one. But I might be wrong. I don't remember. There's like a there was a Han Solo, Boba Fett, and a Yoda one, right? Isn't that what the plan was?
I think so.
Is it just going to be like a 2-hour indie single camera film inside of the Sarlacc pit, just Boba Fett like internal monologue the whole time,
slowly sawing his own arm off and out with a video camera?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
man, I really hope James Franco is Boba Fett.
oh god
Oh, that'd be so wonderful. So that's that for Star Wars news. Cool. What's up with this Amazon phone? Is it too little too late? And how long until you get one?
I am not getting an Amazon phone, no. I don't really like their hardware products. Like the Kindle, like book, like the Kindle reader, you know, not the Fire, I think is cool. But the Kindle Fire, I hate the interface. I had one for a little while and it just wasn't like, it's just not my thing. But I don't live in the Amazon like universe 100% either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the phone, I'm interested to see, because like, so part of it is that Amazon puts these out and they're Android based, but they're not Google Android sanctioned. So you generally don't get Gmail and all these, and then maybe Google is building that for the Amazon phone, although I kind of doubt it, or maybe they already did, but I don't think they did. So you lose out on Gmail and Gcal and all that. You have to use like the kind of built-in email stuff and the built-in, all the, like the built-in apps that Amazon gives you.
Yeah, it's like you're holding the Amazon store in your hand.
Yeah, so I mean that's the kind of the kicker, and the killer feature that I've seen that everybody's been talking about is it's called Firefly, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's basically this like instant search by image and returns the thing that you want to buy to your phone already ready to purchase, like from Amazon essentially.
It's so genius, right?
Oh yeah, I mean you just like hold it up against anything and it's like, oh, those are Swiffer wipes, here you go for $2.99, you can have them delivered to your house tomorrow. And you're like, Jesus, like
there's
it's
dedicated
ridiculous.
Hardware button on the phone just to do that.
Yeah, well, because obvious, you know,
it's like when you you know, like if you ever get married or you're planning like something where you need to make a list at like Target and Bed Bath and Beyond, they give you a little like hand scanner.
Yeah,
that's basically what you're buying. You're buying like the hand scanner that goes directly to Amazon, except instead of scanning barcodes, it scans everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure someone will probably snap a picture of their genitals with it and see if it comes back with
$3.99.
Balls. I mean, if you don't have Prime yet, you get a free year. I think even if you do, you get a free year of Prime, which is worth $100 when you buy the phone. Mm-hmm. I think it's $200 on AT&T with a contract, I believe.
I think that's the thing that kind of surprised a lot of people.
That there was a contract involved?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, based on Amazon's prior track record, was going to come in and like severely undercut the market and maybe put out a phone that was not, you know, subsidized or something like this, because, you know, it's the same, like it's $200. And then if you want to buy it outright, it's like $650, which like, come on.
And it's kind of surprising because it's not the most powerful or greatest spec phone in the world. So you can go get the new HTC One is a fantastic, I have it. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing phone and it's super powerful. It's got a glorious like 1080 screen on it. Like it's amazing. This is like a 720 screen. The specs are a little bit lower on the processor. It's not quite the powerhouse phone that, you know, the Galaxy or the HTC One or the iPhone come out to be, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's priced at the exact same price level as everything else.
Yeah, I mean, like, that pricing scheme is a joke because, like, okay, let's the thing, okay, maybe the thing that you can say positively about this phone is that instead of cutting the price, they basically said it was $200, but you get the 32 gigabyte model, which is like,
yeah,
I mean, that's kind of cool, but like a lot of stuff is up in the cloud now, so that's not super amazing. Right. But that's kind of their value proposition. But seriously, like, you can go to Apple's website and an iPod Touch, which is 32 gigabytes, is $300.
Yeah.
But then if you want to buy a 32 gigabyte iPhone, that's like $750 or $800. And so you're trying to tell me that the inclusion of the wireless antenna for cell phone use is like $500. It's total bullshit, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like amazing to me that in this day and age, like, we still operate on this model of like, oh, you know, you have to sign a 2-year contract to get this phone. You're like, yeah, fuck you. I don't think so. You know,
you can get a Nexus for $350 right now.
Exactly. And you can, like, Windows Phone, there's like a $60 Windows Phone that I think you can get for AT&T or T-Mobile.
I mean, yeah. So I mean, hardware does cost a lot, and I think we don't always see what the final price of these phones are that come out. That,
but
these,
does,
like,
it cost $500 to add that one feature into the phone?
I would probably say that what's happening there is that Apple sells enough iPods to kind of undercut that price and not worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the iPhone, I think, does cost a lot to make. And I don't know. I think there, yes, I see what you're saying, but I also think that generally phones do cost probably $600-$700 to make and put out.
You could buy a Surface Pro 3 for almost the same price as a 32 gigabyte iPhone.
Man,
you see what I mean? Like,
we've wrangled something up here. That
I know.
It's like
you
a joke.
Have all
it's
this
like the
math, like, broken down. There's like a fucking flowchart in front of you.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to the phone. Amazon phone. It's got four cameras on it, so you need four
gears.
Pieces of duct tape to protect yourself from hackers, right? That's how this works. It's tracking you. It's watching your face all the time.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I'm excited that I can point it at balls.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
So the four cameras Scott is alluding to create this 3D effect on the phone that I don't quite understand the purpose of, but basically it kind of like parallaxes the phone so that when you turn it, those four cameras are actually tracking your face. Mm-hmm. And if you turn your face or you turn the phone, it will alter the screen's picture to give you a 3D view of what you're looking at on this flat screen.
They call it dynamic perspective.
I don't know. It seems like a gimmick to me, like very gimmicky, but I don't know.
I mean, I know that it's not the same thing as what 3D is. I know that it's a different technology, but if people were not stoked about like 3D on the 3DS, like what's going to get you stoked about dynamic perspective?
Like, how many different versions of trying to sell 3D do we need to do before people? Yeah. I think that's the thing to me, is like, they could have given up this 3D thing and probably chopped $100 off the phone.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm kind of wait and see on this. Before it came out, I kind of already knew what was coming, and I was like, well, I don't see an Amazon phone selling super well, because I don't think that this level of technology is Amazon's forte. Like, tablets make sense to me and Kindles make sense to me, but the phone, it's just such a different beast than a tablet, you know? And
yeah,
because the Kindle Fire initially, and granted maybe it's fixed now, but the Kindle Fire's interface was sort of so clunky and really based around like reading books and watching movies. And from what I've seen of the phone, it kind of feels the same-ish. That to me is like not why I have a phone, and it's going to be interesting to see what they end up doing. Now, the Amazon Marketplace, their app store, is like fully fleshed out, has tons of apps in it, lots of games. So, you know, they're already kind of ahead of the game there versus mm-hmm. like when Windows came out, it was kind of like, you know, it either needed to work or not, and they didn't really have enough apps in the store, and you know, they were kind of in a different spot. So it's possible, but I'm with you, Scott. I was a little surprised that they didn't undercut everybody and just be like, $300 and the phone is yours, no contract kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, but that being said, maybe this competition will benefit all of us in the sense that maybe the next round of phones, this ushers in 32 gigabyte phones as the baseline, as opposed to 16 gigabyte phones, which we have now.
Well, I have a 32, but you know.
Oh, well, you know what I'm saying. Like the iPhone, the iPhone comes in at 16 as the base model.
We all don't have iPhones, is what I'm saying.
Oh boy.
Ooh.
Well, I think that that's a possibility. I also think that what you're looking at now is like a pretty well defined division of what you get for what you're buying. So Windows is kind of like, if you're in the Microsoft ecosystem and you really enjoy that flat interface and you want to, you know, have Halo on your phone or whatever, you'll go with a Windows phone. Versus Google, I think 100%, every time I show this to people, Google is Google now, and it's mind-blowing, and it does things that are just kind of ridiculous and amazing. And then the iPhone's got the App Store, which is like easily one of the most like deep and, you know, influential stores, period. Like, it always is first with games. It always is first with like the coolest apps. And then you're going to have Amazon now with this like InstaShop phone, essentially, which just lets you point your camera at anything and buy it immediately. So I think it's interesting. You know, it's not a phone that really blew me away, but
I don't think it blew really a lot. I feel like it's a cool phone, but it's not something that you're like, I need this tomorrow. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Unless you live in the Amazon ecosystem. I think that's the,
yeah.
I mean, they basically put it out so that you can compete with other services like,
yeah,
you know, Apple Music and like the other ecosystems out there. So it's something that they needed to do, but I don't think it's going to melt faces or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of services, we didn't talk about this last week, but this is part, we're going to kind of lump this all into one. There were a bunch of music announcements this week. Last week was Amazon Music. Amazon Music is basically their Prime version of their music service. And now you can listen to what I would say is a handful of records for free. It is a very small selection of free choices on Prime right now. Not a lot of back catalog, not a lot of, you know, new and hip. It's kind of a weird smattering of some new stuff and some of their back catalog. Of course, this is all down to contract negotiation, so it's probably just a matter of time before Amazon gets other people on board. But it was a weird showing of them to announce it before they really had much of anything available. But again, if what they do offer is you can upload your music, much like Google Music, you can upload your own records, and that becomes part of your cloud. And then now you would have kind of Prime on top of that, and it just gives you a little bit deeper selection of things to listen to. So if you already have Prime, you have Amazon Music. It's part of Prime. But that got announced and is obviously integrated into their phone. Scott, did you have something? Or
just for the Prime Music, I just feel the same way you do, that it's like, it's a good start, but doesn't have like everything.
Yeah.
Maybe not that it should have everything, but I feel like it's like mostly the hits, you know, it's like stuff that's, if you have Pandora, this music probably has shown up on your Pandora station multiple times, or
so
it's stuff that's already super popular already, and you probably already own it, you know?
Yeah, and that's the weird thing. So I don't use Pandora because I did in my car a little because it integrated with my car stereo, but I don't really love the radio. Like, I kind of like to pick what I want to listen to, and so I pay for Google Music, but then Melissa has an iPhone. So for her, we still have, I think, Ardio that she's using.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so now I'm paying, and what I wanted from Amazon Music was a reason to drop both of those services and use just the one, you know what I mean? And I didn't get it. So we'll see. I think, you know, given time, maybe they make it better. I've also never really been super enthused about their app for music. It's always been kind of clunky and weird, and searching for stuff is hard. And
do you still feel like the Zune interface was the best interface for music?
It is. I really liked it. I do. I will say, and I know I'm not fanboying, but the Google Music interface is very good. It works very well. So
cool.
I would say between those two are probably two of the best that I've used. But I'm not an iTunes fan.
I want like two levels of sort, and I don't understand why other apps don't do this. I want to be able to sort albums by year, and there's no. I think iTunes used to do it.
Oh.
By year.
So you want like all albums by year?
Yeah. So I know like what I got recently, like what came out around the same time, you know, sort of like more like a historical record of the sort of the progression of music over time, like is how I like to browse music.
Yeah.
And you can't do that on anything. I think with the exception of the original Zune software and iTunes used to do it, but I think they reduced functionality in that, which is strange. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Two column sort, you guys. Welcome to Database Fundamentals 101. I don't understand why. Two column sort. All right.
So the other two. T-Mobile and came out, if you are one of the Un-carriers, you know, users, T-Mobile announced that they're no longer going to charge you for data usage for select music platforms. And I don't have them all in front of me, but I think it was like Rhapsody and Pandora and one other. And they said they're working to get pretty much everybody under this umbrella.
And that's in relation to data. They won't charge you data for streaming music services.
You will still pay for your Pandora One subscription or whatever. They're not giving you Pandora One for free, but what they're doing is saying your data cap is no longer going to be affected by that service. So you can walk around and stream music all day long and it won't affect your data usage, which is interesting and very much in line with all this stuff that they're doing as the Un-carrier, quote unquote.
It's nice. It's a great feature.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was their announcement. And then the third one is there's been a lot of hubbub because YouTube is officially, basically, it's been leaked about 7 times, but YouTube finally came out and said it. They're going to announce a streaming music service. And you're going to pay a subscription and you'll get ad-free music streaming through YouTube, which this is how we know we're old, guys.
Yeah, I know.
YouTube is the number one source where people listen to music, period.
We have research assistants that work in our lab that are obviously like younger, you know, college age or whatever. And like when I walk by their desk, they listen to music on YouTube.
On YouTube.
By just pulling up either music videos or like those like lyric videos or just like the straight up audio that somebody uploaded to the website. And that's how people consume music, which like you said, is how I know that we're old because I don't do that either. Yeah.
I have never done that in my life. And that is the number one source for streaming music in the world.
It's crazy.
So they're going to do some sort of obviously there's no details that have been leaked, but what caused the hubbub is that they don't have all of the labels on board. And they made a very vague announcement along the lines of, and this is independent, all the majors are on board. They basically made a deal for licensing with all these people and said, it's a one-way deal. We're not going to negotiate with anybody. The indie labels were like, whoa, we want to negotiate. Like, we don't necessarily want the same deal that the majors got. And they were like, well, too bad. This is the deal. Take it or leave it. And then when a lot of indies said, well, we'll leave it. We're not going to sign on to it. They said, fine, your videos are going to get deleted as of when the service gets launched. It was a really weird, vague announcement along those lines. So people are
not a part of that.
Yeah. Jesus. People are freaking out right now. It could mean anything from user submitted videos that have independent music that isn't licensed to it, to just like official music videos, to only from the streaming service that you pay for. And maybe they'll still be there for ads. I have no idea what it meant. It just, there's rumor that even as close to, which would be before this podcast comes out, but the past Monday, they're saying could be as soon as then that they start removing videos that aren't licensed by YouTube from the service.
It's crazy,
man. Scary stuff.
I don't know what to say.
I don't either. It's hard to process because I'm like, that, first of all, that just seems like a huge undertaking. Like, that seems like a massive undertaking for them to do, but I know they can. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing from a service that has been around for a very long time and people have gotten very used to being free and widely available to use. It's odd to see them kind of coming in this direction.
They have something with like, you can buy movies on YouTube, can't you? Or rent them?
You can rent them. Yeah. 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 That was Google. I think that was part of Google's licensing influence, but
I see.
So who knows? But by the next time we podcast, we may have an answer as to what all this means, but we'll find out. So let's take a break and come back with a couple of reviews.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Cool.
So, Steam Summer Sale. What do you think about that? What do you think about Steam Summer Sale, huh? That's pretty good.
Have you guys picked anything up yet?
I was told to buy Metal Slug 3 this morning, so I did.
Yes.
I bought it because Ash bought it, so we all bought it because Ash bought it.
Yeah, so we can play some Metal Slug. Hey, Metal Slug 3 also has a female protagonist playable. What do you know?
Oh, burn.
That's
Sunset
a really
Overdrive.
Old game, too.
Yeah.
That was really funny. So I picked up a game called Risk of Rain, which the Steam Summer Sale was on sale last night, I want to say, for like $3 or $4 or something, very cheap. And it looked kind of cool, and I gave it a shot. And lo and behold, I actually really like Risk of Rain.
Tell us about
it. Risk of Rain is developed by two students who go to school in Washington. And it's a roguelike, and it's kind of a randomly generated space. How do I describe this? Okay, it is an action platformer where you collect magical and mystical items to help you along your way. And it is a roguelike, meaning that you only get one life, as you know, as all roguelikes are. And but the thing that's really kind of unique about Risk of Rain is the aesthetic of it. So it's all kind of like, you know, kind of still it's pixely, it's kind of retro, but it has this really cool aesthetic. It feels very... It feels like something you would have played in the arcade when you were like, you know, in 1985. That was just impossibly hard. In the way that it works is you kind of go around collecting all these items, and you control this avatar that has like a number of different abilities. So The guy you start off with is a commando character, and he has like a standard like pistol attack where he can shoot a couple times. He can shoot like an aimed attack, which does a little bit more damage and does some knockback. And then he can also do like a kind of John Woo style fire in all directions attack. And he also has a roll. And so you use these different abilities to kind of push the enemies around and make sure that you don't get swarmed. But the enemies are constantly like randomly generating as you go through the map and try to get out.
Mm-hmm.
You also pick up a bunch of like random items to help you along your way. So I found like a vial of like green liquid that gave me health regeneration. I found a cool bomb that would I'd be able to set it down and you know, blow up enemies and things of that nature. I found a drone that flew around me and could attack enemies. And basically there are tons and tons of different items you can find along your way. And I guess it says over 100 unique different items that all do different things, from like alien artifacts to different weapons. And there's also different unlockable character classes, which I thought was really kind of cool for what appeared to be kind of a small game. Everything is kind of hand-drawn, so it's all hand-drawn sprites. I believe from what I read, they were all hand-drawn in MS Paint.
Wow. It looks like kind of like Another World a little bit.
Yeah, it does look like, what is it? Another World or Out of This World? What was that game called?
I think...
Wasn't Another World a TV show?
No, I think Denise, depending on from who the Cosby you're show? Talking about...
I what think was the game, one with the guy with the alien?
It's the game is called Another World. When I think it came out on Nintendo, it was called Out of This World.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
But anyway, so, you know, my time with the game was really kind of fun. I did horribly the first time, and I didn't even make it past the first map. So what you have to do is you have to find like a teleportation beacon and then activate the teleportation beacon somewhere on the map. And then you have to survive for, I think it's like 2 minutes while you're swarmed with enemies before you're teleported to the next map.
Hmm.
And you level up. There aren't any skill trees or anything of that nature, but the items that you accumulate between the maps carry over to the next map. So you collect all this cool stuff. Your character gets a little bit stronger. You know, your health increases as you level up and things of that nature. And then you move on to the next map and there's harder enemies and, you know, more obstacles and things like that to contend with. Levels seem to be all randomly generated. But the music I thought was really awesome, too. Like, I really I was like kind of really into the soundtrack to this game. And I don't know, man, for a Steam Summer Sale, I was really kind of impressed by Risk of Rain. It's, you know, a fun, you know, super hardcore sci-fi roguelike game.
Looks like it's got 4-player co-op as well.
Does it? Co-op, I think, would be a ton of fun. So maybe we should check that out.
Okay, maybe I'll add it to my list.
It's a couple bucks.
Maybe.
You can't really go wrong.
Isn't that the problem with the Steam Summer Sale? Is that when everything is less than $5, you end up with 20 games that you've never played?
Play? Yeah, that's true. That is very true. But I definitely recommend it. I probably didn't describe it very well because I've only played it for about an hour and a half at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe in a couple weeks I will revisit Risk of Rain and tell you what it's like when you get pretty deep inside. So when you get deep inside of it.
You got to squeeze that in between your 51 hours of awesome knots.
Oh, seriously. I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about Mario Kart 8.
Yeah, man. So the reason, I guess one of the primary reasons I got the Wii U was to play Mario Kart 8. And being a veteran of the Mario Kart series, I am familiar with many of the things that happen in this game. And they don't do a whole lot to stray from the formula of Mario Kart because it just kind of works. But the thing that hit me right away was that the environments are crazy looking. It's like total eye candy to go through the levels in Mario Kart 8. So I think I didn't play Mario Kart 7 on the handheld, but I think what they added to that was the ability to fly. So at certain points in Mario Kart 7, you could jump off of a ramp and then the kart would sprout like a hang glider and you can kind of glide around until you reach the other part of the track. So they kind of carried all that stuff over into Mario Kart 8 on the Wii U. And then they added like gravity effects, which is completely mind bending. So at different parts in the track, your wheels kind of turn sideways, like, you know, DeLorean style. And then you have this ability to go upside down and get onto walls and move around different ways to get through the levels and stuff like that. It is just bonkers to look.
Whoa.
Like, it is bonkers to follow this game. And I think what some of the problems were with the past few releases of Mario Kart 8 was with the online play, people would do this thing called snaking, which is basically you drive the whole track doing your drift mechanic, like side to side, so like in a snake motion. Because when you do your drift mechanic, it gives you like a speed boost when you release it. So so when you'd play online, people would basically snake through the whole course, and it was kind of like, not like an exploit, but it was a way to win a lot of races because you were constantly moving at a higher speed than anybody else, even though you were kind of going in like a snake path. And I think when you add gravity, it makes it harder to, I mean, basically they made it harder overall to generate the drifting and boost mechanic out of the drift. So I think they ended up with a more balanced game, which turns out to be a more enjoyable experience. So I only played through maybe the first two circuits, but dude, the tracks are crazy looking. Like I was upside down at one point. Like I didn't even realize my wife was watching and she's like, "Are you upside down right now?" Because we were driving through Mushroom Kingdom and like Peach's Castle was like upside down in the sky somehow, and I was driving alongside it. It's like crazy good.
Huh.
You start out with like, I think they start you with 12 characters, and I think that you can add at least, I think it might go up to like 25, because every time I unlock a secret character, sort of the grid expands a little bit. So they're like all these secret characters. They allow you to customize the carts. Like there's like a little bit of customization, so you can change like the cart itself, the wheels, and then I think the hang glider. And it basically adds like minor modifications to your stats, like your speed, acceleration, weight, and drift ability. So what you end up with is like a really customizable experience for the way that you like to play. The game has motorcycles in it. It's got the carts. It's got hang gliding. The carts go underwater. They go up on walls. There's gravity. There's a few new items. I haven't seen them all. You know, like this is not a humble brag or anything, but like, the way Mario Kart works is that you get better items the further back you are in the pack. But in the easy races, you spend most of the time in the front of the pack and they just give you like a coin. So you don't really get to see a lot of the great items.
Yeah.
And I haven't progressed into the higher levels yet. So I haven't seen a lot of the great items, but you know, it's got like, you got your blue shell, your green shell, your red shell, your banana peels, like all that stuff is still there with the addition of the new items.
I remember all that stuff.
Dude.
Now, can you play this online? Is that, I mean, can you play against other human beings, or are you playing against bots?
Yes, it does have online play. I haven't tried it yet because I just want to go through like all of the races first.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it have networked if I get a Wii U or no?
I believe that using our friend codes, we can find one another and race together.
Ah.
And then it's also got couch co-op.
They still have friend codes?
Yeah,
I think that's what they do is friend codes. I don't
just enter your 16-digit friend code.
Yeah,
you're fucking kidding me. They're still friend codes.
I think that's like a holdover from like the old system, but
I don't understand.
I don't know. I haven't had any friends yet on the Wii U, so I really don't know how it works. But I'm assuming
if they keep having friend codes, you're not going to have any friends.
Yeah, I know. It's super weird, but I think you can race online. I know you can race online. I'm pretty sure you can race with your friends. I know it has couch co-op. You can play, like I said, you can play with the gamepad. You could play with the Pro Controller. You can play with a Wii remote, like whatever. If you want to plug it into that plastic racing wheel and do that, you can do that too. So basically the game is wide open to allow you to play Mario Kart however you enjoy playing Mario Kart, which I think is really awesome. So
that is cool.
I guess... If I were to say anything not positive about the game is that if you've played any Mario Kart game before, it is still Mario Kart. But at the same time, it is still Mario Kart, and therefore it is a really fun game. So, right. Yeah, that's Mario Kart for you. This will be, I guess, an evolving review over time, but it is awesome. And like I said, the thing that jumped out the most was the tracks are just bonkers. Like, they're great. They look awesome.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah.
So was it worth the purchase? Was this and the other game you purchased worth the Wii U?
Man, yeah, I would say yes, because with the stuff all of my like virtual digital downloads that I carried over from the original Wii, which included like Super Nintendo games that I really loved, like Legend of the Mystical Ninja and Castlevania 4, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Pulling that stuff over kind of revitalized that content that I already owned. And then I got... Wonderful 101 separately, Mario Kart 8 with the free game, which is Pikmin 3, which I haven't even started yet. I'm super stoked that I got it. I'm really excited to just kind of like check it out more.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So Wii U, there you go.
Sweet.
Okay, so we're back, and because I've been checking out a lot of things lately that I feel like were underrated and not given enough love, see also Binary Domain, I asked you guys, what is your pick for an underrated game, film, or book that never got the love that it deserved? Let us know. And our first one comes from our pal, Stumpy Nat, Natalie, who writes frequently for our site. She says, ooh, I'm going to cheat and pick two, which I do all the time. Game... Jade Empire, film Salt. I really like Angelina Jolie action movies. Did you guys ever see Salt?
I never did,
but I wanted to.
That was pretty good. Liked it.
Cool.
She plays, super assassin. I think there's some memory loss going on there or something. But anyway, it's really good. I liked it.
Nice.
Yeah. Stephanie G at SigmaRue on Twitter says, Sabriel, the Abhorzen series as a whole, really. I don't have any clue what that is, so I'm going to have to look it up. But I'm going to look up Sabriel and the Abhorzen series. Sounds Japanese.
You can Google it. It appears to be a fantasy novel.
I was going to say fantasy novel. Yes. I was going to say fantasy novel.
It's almost like show and tell that we're doing to let us and other people know about things that you like and maybe get other people into them as well.
100% not Alistair. Michael Coles says The Secret World.
I always found this game intriguing as well. Did anyone ever actually play it or look
into
it?
No, I mean, I have a fear of MMOs, so I never got into it, but it does look really cool. I know a lot of people that follow us play it still. So.
It looks super fascinating. It looks like that's the one that's like set in the modern world, and then there's kind of like fantasy or supernatural elements in the MMO. Am I right about that?
Yeah,
it's sort of... New World Order, spies and magic and kind of that kind of stuff.
I think if I had more room in my life for an MMO, that would be near the top of my list is that game.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Ritzy at Ritzy Fox says film Debs, D-E-B-S. Cheesy as fuck, but one of the best queer movies I've seen as it stays away from common/bad genre tropes. Game, Tale Concerto, super fun, great story, usually doesn't get a second glance because of anthro/furry characters.
Huh. I've seen Debs. Debs was actually pretty good.
Oh yeah?
It's about lady spies.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, Debs is really cool. I've not heard of Tale Concerto, but
Concerto.
Oh, my bad. Reading. Is this, I guess this isn't in the Tales, because that's T-A-L-E. This is T-A-I-L. It's an Atlas game.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I'm bad. Next one is from Can't Talk, and they say, oh boy, I'm going to butcher this. The Bartemius series by Stroud. Intelligent, funny books no one has heard of.
I have been told multiple times by my coworker that I need to read this series.
Really?
Yeah.
About to do some driving, so maybe I'll try and see if any of these are on audible.com.
You should go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA.
You guys are so clever.
We trade books that we should read all that. Like, we don't trade the physical books anymore, obviously, but we like talk about books that each one of us should try. And I got him hooked, of course, on Leviathan Wakes. And then he has told me to read this like multiple times, and I need to check it out eventually.
Cool.
Kate Dollarhide at Kate D says, Enslaved was beautiful, had a great story and fun mechanics, and Shelter, the badger simulator had an awesome art style.
I can give you a plus one for Enslaved.
Enslaved.
That game was
great. I
remember
you talking about that game, yeah.
I think it's on Steam now, too. It's probably on sale. It's a game, it's like an action adventure game that has a companion who is not annoying. You know, it's like, you know, people hate like escorting characters around, and this one was helpful. You know, similarly to, you know, like The Last of Us with helpful partner characters.
Yeah.
Shelter is a game made by the same folks that made PID, that really hard retro platformer game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made, you know, like she says, a badger simulator, which I really enjoyed PID. And when I saw this game, I was kind of confused, but it is definitely on my radar as well.
Ash, why don't you give your answer?
Me, I don't know if you guys remember this. I used to be, you probably do. I was an arcade rat, and there used to be a game that was on the Neo Geo called King of Monsters. Does anybody remember King of Monsters?
King of Monsters was great.
Yeah, I actually almost, and this is, I don't know if I've ever told this story in the podcast, but I almost died because of King of Monsters.
you almost died?
I really did. I made my dad, there was only one place that had it left, and I think I was like 12. And I used to ride on the back of my dad's motorcycle a lot when I was a kid. And I made him take me to like the other side of town to go play King of Monsters like one Saturday morning. So we went and had breakfast, and I went and played King of Monsters in this arcade for like an hour. And then coming home on the back of the motorcycle, we got in a motorcycle accident.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
And, you know, we were both okay, but my helmet, like I hit so hard, my helmet cracked. But I was, I guess, okay. I think I'm all right. But the motorcycle got all fucked up. But that was my fond King of Monsters memory. But I loved King of Monsters, which is a Neo Geo game where you played as classic monsters in like a giant map, and you would brawl. It was kind of like if you took like Rampage and made it like more 3D.
Oh yeah.
But they never really remade King of Monsters in you know, for any of the modern systems, at least well. So
there's a tabletop game, weirdly enough.
Is there really?
Based around the concept of King of Monsters.
God, I absolutely loved it because you could play as like a Godzilla type character. There was like a Ultraman type character. They all had special powers and abilities, and it was kind of like you take those classic monsters and then you turn them into wrestlers because you could do all sorts of like backbreakers and like DDTs, and they had special attacks. It was fucking awesome, and I could just see now. I'm picturing, like, just because I've been playing so much Watch Dogs, a city like that. And like graphics of that level, but with gigantic monsters running around, smashing.
Oh, that would be
everything.
Amazing!
It would be so much fun. So
the tabletop game is called King of Tokyo, and you play as one of six monsters: Alienoid, Cyber Bunny, Gigazor, Kraken, Mecha Dragon, and the King. And then you basically have this system of like brawling and taking over parts of the city, and that's how you win.
This looks like a game they would have played on Nick Arcade.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Yeah,
that's my underrated game that needs to
that's
come
great,
back to
man.
Life. What about, I think one of you guys is reading Eric's, right?
Oh, yeah. So Echap 33 says, Dread, which is a great popcorn movie, but I feel critics ripped it because of Stallone's awful Judge Dread movie.
Dread was fantastic.
You guys,
I liked
it
too, man. I watched it because Matt recommended it, and I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was really good. It, like, way better than it deserved to be, if that is a way to say it.
Yeah, super low budget but awesome. Like they did a great job with it. I mean, you can tell it's kind of like, you know, you can tell it's like a $15 million movie and not a $200 million movie, but it's
even then some of the shots were really gorgeous. Like they did a good job.
Yeah, They made Bullet Time not boring again.
Exactly.
Somehow. Robert Freemering, Mr. Slick. Hey, he says, Spice World, of course.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
Love this guy so much. I honestly just like, we need to hang out with him sometime.
Spice World is a fantastic movie.
It is.
I don't care who you are. You have to watch it.
Yeah, sure.
Zelenthare says, this is so difficult. I'm going to have to go with the Valorian book series by Mary H. Herbert.
More books I need to read.
I know, right?
I'm assuming this is fantasy.
Yeah, there's so many fantasy genre books out there, and it's like hard to know which ones are good and bad. And
yeah.
Oh my God, there are a lot of Valorian Chronicles. There are 6 of them.
Wow.
Sorry, we have our excellent community to tell us about all the things that we should be seeing.
This is the wrong Valorian Chronicles. Let me look up the right one. That was like a vampire. Here we go. Valorian by Mary H. Herbert. It's so sad when you can go to Amazon and pick up a book for a penny.
Yeah.
This author. Oh, man, there's a lot of these, too, though. They look cool. Sword and sorcery kind of books.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Reminds Scott. Me of the I was just gonna say we had a I think from the last podcast we ended up having a lengthy discussion about Betrayal at Krondor on Twitter, right?
Yeah. I felt bad for Patrick Weeks because all of a sudden he probably got like 800 ats.
I wonder if there's like a Krondor Twitter account that still exists, you know, like retro
is.
From the 90s. Anyways, Justin at Gigawatt Conduit says Syndicate and Kingdoms of Amalur were pretty fun. Not a lot of people talk about Graceland, which is also good. I wonder if Justin is referring to the Syndicate game that came out recently, like the shooter.
So. Yeah. Well, hopefully he's talking about the old Syndicate, which was fucking incredible. So it was sort of a more of a strategy game. The new Syndicate was actually pretty good. It was actually done by the same team that that worked on the new Wolfenstein, which I really liked.
It is better than you might think.
Yeah, it is pretty solid. Mm-hmm. Kings of Amalur, it is in my pile of shame. I played for an hour and like realized I was kind of playing an MMO, and then I stopped.
Me as well.
So, yeah. Faith Williamson, who is Fear the Faith on Twitter, she says, I'm going to have to say Twin Spica, that manga never received anywhere near enough love. So...
We're spreading the love today.
Yeah, I don't know anything about manga anymore. Sorry,
Matt,
guys.
Do you have a pick?
I do. It's a movie that I quite enjoyed that basically flopped in the theater. I don't think it ever remade its budget, but it was Danny Boyle's Sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
Which
great movie.
Some people thought it had like a hokey ending or whatnot, but I actually really enjoyed the movie and thought it was like a really great sci-fi movie from a really innovative director. So
yeah,
that is mine.
Good. That's fantastic. That's a great pick.
I think everybody should go watch it immediately on Netflix because I'm sure it's there.
It's a really good movie.
Justin at Rev7 says Spec Ops: The Line, totally underrated game with an amazing story that is hardly ever told in games. I've heard that game was a lot better than it got credit for, but
yeah, I heard that too.
Never played it.
Me either. I have not touched it.
Which I guess is the point of this.
$10 on Steam sale right now.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So timely that we can talk about all these underrated things when half of them are on sale right now.
Absolutely.
Alex at AlexN7 says, the Sword of Truth books. The show was dreadful, but the books are fantastic as long as you get past the repetition.
So let me tell you something. My wife has read 13 of these novels.
What?
13. Yeah. It is absolutely massive, massive fantasy series that ran for like, I don't know, like 20 years or something like that. But she read, I think, all of them, all 13, and absolutely loved them. So, you know, really epic fantasy, all sorts of crazy mythology and stuff. But she's totally into it.
Good recommendation.
Yeah. Jen Jarvis, who is Hokey98JJ on Twitter, says, Fuse, a lot of fun to play, plus your team consists of Femshep, Liara, and Varric. And we had fun with Fuse.
We did.
I know, like, with all the marketing for Sunset Overdrive, they're saying, oh, you know, they're kind of talking negatively about their own game, Fuse, but Fuse, when played with friends, was actually a fun experience.
You have to play the game with friends, though.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's a horrible experience.
It's just because the AI wasn't very good and the game was too difficult for you to get through, like, on the hard difficulty. Yeah. But it was great. We had such a blast playing it. All three of us played it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
with friends, it was great.
Yeah, so. Fantastic. Justin Banks at Midtown 583 says, two films that I loved, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and The Time Machine, Orlando Jones version. I can plus one both of those, especially The Time Machine.
Yeah.
I actually, on my last set of trips, went back and started reading League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the Alan Moore story, or the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
It is very Alan Moore-y, and it's good, but it is at times hard to follow. So, But I did enjoy it a lot, but it's a pretty neat setting.
Awesome.
But the movie's awesome. Movie's like, it's sort of hokey, like admittedly, but fun. I enjoyed it.
It's like a good popcorn movie.
Yeah. Scott, do you have an answer?
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned like Legend of the Mystical Ninja previously, but I think I'll reach back even further and I will recommend a Nintendo game, which is called Orb 3D. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Okay.
No.
Orb 3D was a game for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Came with a pair of those paper 3D glasses. And it's such a bizarre game. Pretty much they give you a grid of like, it's like a gigantic Connect Four grid. And there are bubbles that appear on the grid. And basically your job is to pop those bubbles. And then the puzzles become different over time. But your avatar is this orb that flies in a horizontal circle around the grid. So it'll like fly in front of the bubbles and then it'll go behind the grid and fly behind the bubbles. And you like push the button to have the orb basically break through the grid, like in order to pop the bubbles. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the game was so bizarre because the challenges, like it's basically like a series of puzzles that you play through, like 100 different levels, but every level had a different challenge and you didn't know exactly what you had to do to pass the level. And the game was so difficult in terms of like trying to figure out what to do, like not losing the orb, not running out of time, trying to hit the targets because the velocity of the orb is so fast.
Mm-hmm.
It was just such a bizarre game that like I really got into for some reason. And
this sounds like something Ash should go back and play.
Yeah,
yeah, it does.
It had like super weird. It was just like it had super weird music, super weird graphics. There would be puzzles where it was just like giant eyeballs and stuff like that. And then you would stop at this like intergalactic filling station in order to get more fuel to get further in the game. But like the targets to get the ball through were so small. Oh God, the game was so frustrating. And I love the shit out of it. So that's Orb 3D for the NES.
Wow.
That's my well, bizarre recommendation.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Go dust that off, everybody. You're probably emulated or something.
Probably.
Yeah. JR at Girl Loves Gaming says, a movie I feel was a bit underrated was the movie adaptation of the game Clue, a classic oldie but goodie.
Yes.
This is like a straight up classic. Like that thing
cult
is
classic.
No,
yeah, cult classic. That's the word we're looking for.
That used to be like the only thing they play on Comedy Central on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clue is great.
Yeah.
Clue is great.
The red herring.
Am I next? I think I am.
Sure.
Dan Thompson, IMDTM, says, Road to Perdition is one of my favorite films. Seems like many people have never seen it. I actually really liked that.
I did, too. It was,
Tom Hanks.
It was very good.
Hanks with an
X.
The
Hanks in anything, and it's fantastic.
It's true. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty, pretty cool dude.
And it had, what's his name? Pretty guy. What's his name?
I don't know.
Jude Law?
Jude Law. That's what I was looking for.
Pretty guy.
He's a pretty guy.
Change his name legally. The pretty guy.
He is. I would say he's a pretty gentleman, right?
Gattaca. Man. Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Was he Gattaca?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in Gattaca.
Yeah, he's Gattaca. The Flying Beer at the Flying Beer 1, not 2, says, Idiocracy. It seems to be a stupid and clumsy movie, but it's deeper than that and also frightening and all too real. Idiocracy weirdly like had problems when it got released coming out, and Mike Judge had like a hell of a time with that movie, but has since then I think rebounded into sort of maybe not cult classic, not Office Space level, you know, territory, but
mm-hmm.
but I think a fantastic movie that if you haven't seen you should watch, because the parts where like corporations have backed the government, like it's like the Doritos election and all that. Like, I forget all the different jokes, and they water their crops with Gatorade, and it's just amazing. Like, the stuff that happens in that movie is all too real.
Like, their political debates are like wrestling events.
Yeah, they're wrestling events, and the president is Terry Crews, which is amazing.
It's pretty good.
I think it's Terry Crews, at least. Yeah, so great movie.
Yeah. Rasmus at Rasmus VN says, Les Revenants 2012, the series, glued to the subtitles throughout. I think that's The Returned in English, according to IMDb, if I have the right thing here.
I need to check that out. It looks pretty cool. Note. Aaron Devella, who is at Aaron Devella on Twitter, says, game Cosmic Encounter, a tabletop just re-released. Awesome. Need to check that out. And one of the best games I've ever played, which is one of the best games I've ever played. And the movie was Jawbreaker. I remember Jawbreaker.
Yeah.
Rose McGowan. Good stuff.
Like a modern day Heathers sort of.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Jawbreaker was good.
Karsten Peterson at Scared Knave says game Heimdall Viking inspired RPG 1992 DOS Amiga.
Wow.
I don't remember that. Film Der Krieger und die... Thank you for giving me the German title. Der Krieger und die Kaiserin. And the book, the Malazan Book of the Fallen.
Wow.
These are three things that I have to look up. I'm okay with that.
I have to make a list. New stuff for the summer.
Trying to find screenshots of this game.
Heimdall the Viking. I kind of remember this game a little bit.
It
I remember
looks
the
like
name.
An isometric... action RPG or something.
Malazan Book of the Fallen is a 10 book series fantasy like genre or series book. It's kind of crazy. There's 10 of them.
I really appreciate the well-roundedness of our community.
Yeah,
and all the responses.
Like some cool stuff, some random stuff. I love it.
Lissa at Lissabeth says, guess this is my cue to plug Moon with Sam Rockwell. Such a great sci-fi flick made on a teenage budget. I think we can plus three that here, right?
Yeah, Moon is fantastic.
Cool. And last but not least is Amanda Fluidfire on Twitter says, the Kung Ko series by David Wingrove, which is amazing. In-depth series spanning the globe. He also wrote the Myst books too. Awesome.
Well, I hope everyone's got a big list of games and movies and books to go enjoy now. I hope that
was
useful.
Kind of ridiculous. It's a whole lot of stuff.
We might have to do this again sometime because I really like this. This is good.
We honestly, I think we do it on accident like once a year.
Yeah.
So we'll probably be doing it again next year as well. But good stuff. And it's a whole lot of really fun stuff to look up and hopefully collect. So
agreed.
So cool.
Let's take us home, Ash.
All right. So thank you guys again for listening to episode 158 of the Rated NA podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and then it's Matt, Scott, Ash, and Hillary with one L at NerdAppropriate.com. Please like us on Facebook, and that's / NerdAppropriate on Facebook. And schedule's going to be a little weird in the coming weeks due to travels, but we'll still be getting these out by hook or by crook. And Matt and I are going to Comic-Con at the end of July, so we'll have some Comic-Con stuff coming up, too. See. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Whoa.
Did you call yourself back?
How did you come back so quick?
I'm back. Hey, yo. Sounds a little better. Called myself back. What do you know? Pretty fucking amazing. I like the Skype. I like the Skype-y program. It's pretty good.
Pretty good. Right. Pretty good.
Go ahead.